Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
You know, I've been rethinking how I style the smallest spaces in my house this summer. Instead of stressing over what won't fit, I've been looking at tons of versatile styles from Bob's Discount Furniture that actually multitask. Whether you're working from home or hosting guests, take that Betty dining set, for example. When it's just me, it's a compact, space-saving setup with a super comfy Bobapedic seats. But it extends in a snap when company arrives. It comes in four fun colors, boasts over 1,500 five-star reviews, and at just $5.99 for a seven-piece set, you'll actually have a budget left for the dinner party. And if you love that retro chic vibe, they also have the Betty Bedroom Set featuring gorgeous felt-lined storage drawers and another 1,500 five-star reviews. Or if you just want to lounge, check out the Phantom Power Reclining Sofa. It's packed with cup holders, charging ports, and Bobapedic cushions without taking over your whole living room. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to On the Bench. I am your host for this episode, Brendan Sinone. I'm joined by Chris Nee, later to be joined by Brett Nevitt as well. Producer Brett lurking somewhere in the background, as he's known to do. We got an episode that's going to have a touch on a few things, but it's been a little while since I think we've actually kind of dove. Chris got it. He's got his A game here on a nice Friday morning. But we're going to dive into some recruiting stuff. Chris was in Amelia Island, so spring meeting updates, some noteworthy nuggets there. And then Brett will fill us in as the baseball season comes to conclusion. And these scrappy Florida State Seminoles, despite a serious injury in the middle of the season that could have derailed things, have kept fighting along there. And we'll get into the context with that as well. Before we go any further, as Chris said, sorry, Colin. Sponsored by
the Turner Group.
There we go. Colin, Amy Turner do an awesome job in the home selling, home buying market, state of Florida. They're based in Central Florida, but really like anywhere you can go ahead use the word tendrils. Colin's tendrils are all over the place. By the way, he's a coach at Winter Park High School, lacrosse coach, typically in Central Florida, a good lacrosse program. They went down to South Florida and lost by a single point to the ultimate state champions. I think it may have been Jupiter, somewhere in the ritzy Palm Beach area. So good for him, good for his boys, scrapping along there and making it work. Sorry, Colin. And then after you're done listening to this ad read, I would suggest you maybe pick up a bottle of
Chattanooga whiskey.
That's the only thing to make it better right now. Chattanooga whiskey crushing it in the craft distillery game. They have a strawberry infused gin out on the market. I am very interested in doing a little mixing of that. So yeah, they do everything. It's not just whiskey, folks. Like, that's what they're known for. But when I tell you they experiment, they get after it. They experiment. So, and their limoncello, I think it was like a lime, was awesome. Zach got it. It was a really, really good bottle. So like, when they paint outside the lines, they do some good stuff. But if you're looking for their 111 proof, which is the best bang for your buck out there in the market, my opinion from a craft distillery, their whiskey, you can't go wrong with that. So Chris, two recruiting developments to go over here, and we're getting close to the OV season. I think maybe we'll do more of a preview for that once the May 29th weekend is starting to roll around. That's when FSU will get into it. But other programs have started it up too. The two things I really think we should focus on first and foremost is quarterback, right? That's the one that always kind of moves the needle. That matters for perception. I think your quarterback recruiting often indicates how other things are falling in line with recruiting as well. And it's been a series of disappointments for Florida State at quarterback recruiting. Can't sugarcoat it, just that is. They are pivoting. They are working. It seemed like their plan B option was starting to get away from them a little bit. But lo and behold, I think there's a little momentum right now here entering the weekend that Florida State could beat out, I'm going to say it, Rutgers for Logan Flaherty out of Southwest Florida. Is he in Port Charlotte or Punta Gorda? Which one is it? I get them confused.
He's Port Charlotte, I believe.
Okay, so Port Charlotte. So Southwest Florida, Port Charlotte, which I think is in Punta Gorda. I always get, again, confused. Sorry, Colin. But let's talk Logan Flaherty. He's a three-star recruit from down there. He'll be a four-year starter by the time his high school career wraps up. Multiple playoff appearances. He's got a lot of cool stuff we'll talk about, but it seems like it's an FSU and Rutgers battle. Again, Rutgers for the former UCF commit. Go Knights.
Yeah, I was going to bring up, he is a former UCF commitment. He backed off of that commitment here to the Knights here in about the last month. As you mentioned, FSU had kind of lined up about a half dozen quarterbacks during the spring as far as guys that came in for visits. A few of those being big names, Izzy Abrams, Jake Narrott, Wonderful Mons. Of those names, Wonderful was the one that I think FSU most felt like they were in the best position for mutually. Then he visits Notre Dame one time, it becomes, he's Irish. So yeah, that put him back at the drawing board. They go with Flaherty as sort of the key focus. Some of the feedback I've gotten in the last 2 to 3 weeks talking to basically second type of quarterback options for them, so like a DJ Hunter at Buford, for example, mm-hmm. is that they were approaching a mid-May decision as far as exactly what direction they went. Now, I don't know. I haven't been able to match up with Hunter telling me what he told me, if that meant that they knew Flaherty was likely to make a decision here around mid-May, because the expectation is a decision likely comes from him between today and maybe May 18th, which is Monday, more than likely. Obviously, a young man's allowed to delay himself if he wants to delay himself, but the belief is that he's in decision mode, and it's between the two that Brendan has brought up. So I think there's an element of he is now the domino that FSU is waiting upon. And with quarterback recruiting, it is all a domino game. Once one goes down, especially one on your board, it alters what you do next. In regards to Flaherty, longtime FSU target. They've dealt with him for several years. He came in, for example, I think he was visiting when like Coach Hand's first visit weekend, which was December of 24. I believe he was in during that when they had a bunch of linemen in. I believe he was one of the other individuals that came in. He's been here for spring practices. He's been here in the summer, I believe.
Hey, we saw him camp last year, right? And he was probably the quarterback they had at the one we were at.
So, like, the familiarity between him and the staff and both previous staff members and current staff members is very strong. He has a good relationship with Austin Tucker. I think the issue with FSU and him is that it's been kind of a weird what's the right word to use here? The amount of attention and desire that FSU has had to add him has fluctuated a great deal at times. Yeah. I think it was very strong early on, shifted in the middle, especially with his commitment to UCF. I think it's been kind of interesting here as he's backed off UCF and now approached another decision. I think that's had an impact on this recruitment. There's also the financial portion of it. I believe Rutgers' offer is better than FSU's offer. I don't think FSU has the appetite to exactly like just ramp up the cash and just try to buy a commitment type thing. And I don't think Flaherty is solely deciding upon money, but let's not act like money is not part of the decision. So where do things stand as of yesterday, Thursday? Felt like FSU had turned the tide a little bit back in their direction, but not ready to call this race at this point. It did feel like earlier in the week, and for most of the recruitment since he backed off UCF, that Rutgers was one most trending for him. For example, asked him a couple weeks ago about official visits, and the only one he referenced as being near set was Rutgers. As Zach has talked to him and people attached to him, it's been pretty consistently Rutgers until the last about 48, 72 hours, where it felt like FSU was closing that gap and maybe making some real headway. So why does FSU need to get him? Well, if they want a high school quarterback in this class at this point in the game, this is probably their best option. Yeah, their high school quarterback recruiting and development has been left a lot to be desired in recent years. There's also always a belief of, well, you have a portal quarterback who's going to leave, and Ashton Daniels, what's next for them? Traditionally, in the last three seasons, now that answer has been a transfer portal quarterback. Yeah, we'll see. But this is all if and or buts, and who knows who will be coaching the football team at the point we get to when this all matters. So, like, it's kind of a wasted discussion, in my opinion.
Well, there's a lot to unravel there, but you kind of deflated it for saying it's a wasted discussion. So I don't know how much further
to go. I mean, it is. Like, if FSU is trying to assemble a 2027 football high school recruiting class, they need to take a high school quarterback. Logan Flaherty would be a good pick for them in that class. Cut and dry. The reality is, if we fast forward to mid-November and this place is undergoing a coaching change and a staff change, the next staff necessarily won't like the last staff's picks, and that's where it gets into that. And there's also the element of, when the season wraps up, is Kevin Sperry or Malachi Marshall the guy that they believe is their next quarterback? Or do they go and recruit over them with another portal quarterback, as they have done in the last three cycles? And therefore, that changes the discussion of those two. And Jaden O'Neal should be mentioned, though he's not going to play this year because of injury. So, like, that's what it is. That's just reality of what quarterback recruiting has turned into for FSU.
So we'll evaluate, I guess, Logan Flaherty more if FSU ends up getting him. I think we'll spend a
little time. I like him as a player.
I don't
think he's a world beater. I don't think he's bad. I think he's a guy who's very capable of running an offense and has really had a great deal of success at high school level. I think for me, the thing with Logan is, I'm not sure where the ceiling is. Like, I don't view him like I view some of the other guys they had in here as having a ceiling where it's going to just really maximize at the collegiate level. All that being said, do I think he can be a successful college quarterback and help a football team? Heck yeah. I think he is capable of that. Luke Altmaier, it feels kind of like that to me. And Altmaier took a while, but eventually became a pretty good college quarterback. I just don't think Logan is a guy that I think, like, the next level ceiling for him is on par with, like, what I think of, like, a Jake Notrott, who I think is one of the better quarterbacks in this class.
I think 24/7 has an 86 on Logan Flaherty, which for us means anytime between 86 and 88 means a Power Four starter.
I think it's slightly low ranking wise. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy that should be on the cusp of being a four-star, but probably not a four-star. So just slightly higher than that, 88, 89 type of range. But yeah, I can live with it.
Yeah. It's speaking to they evaluate through the prism of NFL upside. And that's, I think, what that's speaking to is 86 probably means lower NFL upside, but there's a chance to be a power four starter. He does have a unique, like, skill set. He is a legitimate athlete. I think he runs closer to a 4.6 and a 4.7, like, verified. So he has that to him. He's a baseball player. I mentioned earlier, like, a four-year starter at a pretty decent high school. He's gotten to the playoffs the last 2 years. Does a nice job with, like, we'll get into the evaluation process of it later. But there's things to like there and a skill set to build on. What was that?
Smart and tough as well.
Yeah, he's very mature. I think he's regarded as pretty mature. So yeah, there's things to like and skills to build on. You'd have to build an offense. I always thought he was probably, like, it made sense. Maybe that's why it's been ebbs and flows. He made sense, like, as a Gus Malzahn quarterback. I thought there was a lot in his game that would fit into what Gus likes to do, both in terms of some of the RPO stuff and then the running stuff. Bigger picture though, Chris, and this is not to beat a dead horse, but when you talk about, you know, quarterback recruiting and some of the other players in this class, I view quarterback as, and really like how you do recruiting the quarterback in high school level, not always apples to apples, but the Venn diagram overlaps a pretty good deal. Your presence as a recruiting operation, how you do both recruiting, how well funded you are, how you're able to make pitches, your appeal, all those things kind of, like, Quarterbacks are often considered bell cows of the class for a reason. It's the most important position. They're supposed to take on a leadership role, and how you recruit that position, I think, is often, long story short, indicative of how your program is running as a recruiting operation right now. And as we enter the OV season, I know FSU likes fireworks in July. That's when they kind of try to gain some momentum there. But it does seem to be reflective of, yeah, this is not a whole lot of juice right now. Like, you're scrapping with Rutgers to beat out a kid from the state of Florida. It's probably your fourth or fifth option right now.
And one thing I'd add to this whole conversation, quarterback recruiting has always been something that's been sped up. It is more sped up this year. And in general, I think recruiting as a whole is more sped up this year.
The earlier OVs, I mean, you've seen like NC State. I'm very curious about the big picture. Like, NC State's had some nice momentum early in their recruiting cycle. I'm just curious how programs are going to use the early May official visits to,
you know, and more schools are pushing for a commitment before OVs with high level prospects, guys that you're making a financial investment in at a high rate, which any quarterback who you view as a potential starter for your program is going to fall into that category.
Is well into six figures generally at the
power.
Rubbing off on you there.
Yeah, you are. FSU's efforts to make quarterback the most important position on the football team has been very short the last couple years. I mean, they handpicked Tommy Castellanos because he fit the OC, but when you hired the OC, you also blew up all of your recruiting efforts at the position for the last 18 months, including commitments you had, guys you had in kind of lined up. And then that guy stays for all of basically 12 months. The position coach, Gus Malzahn, stays for all of 12 months. So again, you're shifting the dynamics of how you're going about the recruiting. It's just not a really good way of doing business, and they've not done a good job of making up for it by getting ultra aggressive at grabbing certain individuals at the position, whether it be via the portal or high school ranks.
All right, let's move on. I think we've established what this is and what it could be. Let's talk about the other recruiting tidbit that drew some headlines earlier this week, and that is Jabari Watkins from. It was a debate here, Chris. Would you consider Thomasville in quote-unquote Florida State's backyard? I described it as localish. Some of our subscribers said backyard. It's 45 minutes away. It's technically a state over. Where do you land on backyard gate?
I view it as kind of like the news channels. Like, where do they broadcast to? And like, you know, CTV, for example, in Tallahassee, they broadcast to that area. So it is. It is semi-local within the umbrella.
So localish.
Once you're over a state line, I'm a little uncomfortable with local, but is it nearby? And yeah.
I went up to their practice 2 weeks ago. There's a lot of FSU gloves being worn by players. Jabari Watkins among them, but there was probably about five or six pair of Florida State gloves going around. So I do think there's location is important. That's the defending state champions at the 5A level in Georgia.
Continuing load up their roster with great facilities. They're a destination school at this point. They have been.
I was talking to their head.
To turn themselves into a destination school.
Get this. I was talking to their head coach after I was there, and he was just like, "Thank you for coming by." I was like, "Yeah, sure thing." And I was like, "Good luck with the scrimmage tomorrow." They had an intra-squad scrimmage, and it was about to storm then. It was supposed to storm all day on that Saturday. And I was like, what are you all going to do? Hopefully it doesn't rain. He's like,
point at the indoor. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. That was a baller move.
Yeah.
A lot of nice indoors in South Georgia these days, but theirs might be the Taj Mahal of them all.
He knew, like, he this is like kind of this funny, like sheepish, like he pointed at it. But anyway, so Jabari Watkins is a 4-star recruit. He's got a 90 grade. He had about 800 receiving yards last year at TCC. And when I had spoken with him on that Friday, he basically said FSU is at the top for him. And then less than a week later, this is probably why this is somewhat jarring, but he canceled his official visit to Florida State. And I think when you see that combined with one, the quote that he gave, and then two, seeing a local prospect for a program that's been devoid, I mean, this class, I don't think they have a 4-star recruit in it right now per the 24/7 sports rankings, if I'm not mistaken. So someone that seems, I think, like a, you know, if you wanted him, you know, there's a chance, a good chance you can go ahead and get him. It doesn't develop. And that led to quite a bit of turmoil and vitriol on the message board, on social media as well. I don't know how much I should or shouldn't say on this, Chris. I'm going to defer to you on it for now. I'll try to fill in the blanks where I can, because I've got stuff that's just off record on it. But ultimately, like I think, well, you go ahead. I got thoughts, but I'll fill in the blanks as I can.
I think Jabari had some, I'll use the words, nervous energy and wanting to go to FSU, or at least trending in that direction. And FSU was trying to throw up at least a yellow light, if not a red light. And I don't think that mixing of messages between the two parties went well with Jabari. I think that's ultimately what led to him backing off the official. We'll see if an official comes about. Cam Brooks happened last year, same school, and that was all weird. And then in the end, he ends up at FSU. Thomas County Central and FSU comes down to two things for me. One, Jabari Watkins is a talented kid, but FSU does like the recruiting haul last year at the position. I think they like some of their young pieces. I don't think they're in a rush to load up on wide receivers. If they wanted half a dozen in this class, I don't think they would blink at somebody like Jabari Watkins wanting in. I think they want to be a little bit more exclusive, and that's why they're trying to play with a little patience. That's one part of it. I think the other part is FSU's got to be better at recruiting Thomas County Central, in the sense of the conversations, the messaging, the discussions, the showing up to the actual school and doing the recruiting portion. I think all needs to be better, because I think it will avoid situations such as this and others we have seen in recent past.
Yeah, two points. And I think let's just talk about the bigger picture of it, because that is becoming a really good program. It's always been a good program in Prince Georgia. There's Charlie Ward Boulevard or drive going into the school. Yeah, like, you know,
Who's a defensive lineman there next year.
He is
one of the better players in the country. Obviously, FSU's not obtaining those types consistently these days, but when it is semi-local in your backyard, like, that is where the relationship needs to be. And there's enough other individuals there who can help a football team that it just needs to be a place that you're making an effort at. It reminds me of Lincoln in the early 2000s, when they just had enough dudes when you walk through the door that you should be there. You should have a presence, especially when it's not going to claim an entire day to go there. It's going to claim 40 minutes on the way up, 2 hours at school, 40 minutes on the way back, 3 hours of your day. It's the kind of place that needs to be a priority and better recruited by FSU.
And to be fair, Tim Harris was there the day I was there. Like, I got video of him watching on it with Jabari Watkins. So, like, it's not like there's a no contact, but I will say that early upon my arrival there, people who know him with FSU site did say that they wish FSU would be there more often. You know, there's two sides to every story, understandably, but that is the perception of the people living in Thomas County Central, like, realm. Like, and so I think that is an important discussion point, is, you know, regardless of whether you or I, even Florida State, thinks they're going there enough or have a good enough relationship, if that side of it doesn't view it as such, then that's important, and that needs to be resolved, because that's now two cycles in a row now where that's kind of a narrative that's gotten out there. And you and I and Zach, Chris, we've been critical of Florida State's inability to squash narratives on various fronts through this regime. And it's just, you know, I'm not saying these should be layups. I'm not saying that they need to take Jabari Watkins if they don't have him as the top guy, but this can't be a thing that persists for multiple years in a row. It's my opinion. It's not optimal.
It's also, like, if you develop good relationships in recruiting and open conversation, what transpired with Jabari probably doesn't get to that point. Certainly, one would hope, it's not in public view.
Yeah,
and I think that's where you got to be better at it. And I know the entire game has changed in the last half decade into a money game. Money was always part of it, but money is wholeheartedly the primary reason for recruiting now. But there's still an element of, like, just have a clear understanding. Like, a guy should know if it's fully green lit or if it's not fully green lit. And for that to come about after OVs are scheduled and turn into what it turned into, and in the end, it may not be anything, because this might get resolved one way or the other. It's tiring that continues to happen. To me, that is an inefficiency in the way the job is being done.
Okay. Yeah, and that's I think we'll put a bow on recruiting talk for now. We'll get into it a little bit more going into late May, so in a couple weeks. Actually, yeah, 2 weeks from today, that's when it kicks off for Florida State. You'll be out there on the bench with your photos and your is it going to be dark in the morning when they arrive, or will you have nice lighting for these arrivals? This should be fine.
I would presume it would be like mid-morning. So
all right,
the main reason spring is dark is they're trying to get kids in before the practices begin.
So they'll literally be in the clear
2 hours before they hit the field, so like 7 a.m.
Let's transition to talking a little bit about you were in Amelia Island this past week. It's generally been something I've gone to, but I wanted a big dog to be barking there. You know what I mean? I thought that was for the best. And so have you been there before? You've been ever?
It's been years, but yes.
Okay. All right. I think you and I may have gone my first year at Knowles 24/7. Anyways, so it's been a while. So one, how is the Ritz? Was it everything you remembered it being?
Yeah, I appreciate that the parking was free. You only had to pay to valet.
That's always the thing. That's always a source of anxiety for me, shockingly, Chris, is that I have to go and get I don't carry cash on me, so I always have to get cash because I don't want to not tip the valet. All right, so you're at spring meetings. It goes on for several days. You talk to Luke Laux the first day. Second day, Mike Norvell, Michael Alford. You also get the it's off record, so you can't talk about it, but you do a little breakfast with Mike Norvell, which is a cool thing he's done with local and regional reporters. I do like legitimately appreciate that and find that to be a fun yearly event. So the things that we can talk about on the record, let's start off with Mike and just, yeah, he has about a 30-minute conversation. I know a lot of it was about some of the trends in college football and playoffs. And I don't think we should dive into that a ton. I don't think people are going to care a ton, more so his thoughts on his team. And specifically, Chris, let's stop at this is the first time we've gotten to talk to him on record since they named Ashton Daniels as the starting quarterback. Let's dive into that. I think that's probably the most interesting. It's what he thinks of the quarterback room and why ultimately he picked Ashton there.
Yeah, he said Ashton wanted that Kevin didn't lose it. He spoke about both of those individuals as well as Malachi Marshall. I thought his quarterback comments were good in depth. To me, I came away from the comments specific on Ashton and Daniels winning the job is that he operated the offense the most efficiently with the most consistency is how I kind of walked away from those comments. It wasn't electric or special. Truthfully, a lot of the times they talk about the offense, I feel like they talk about every other piece of the offense outside of the quarterback, and that the quarterback just has to exist and allow it to operate at a decent manner, and that they believe they can be good with some other dynamic pieces around them. And when I say other dynamic pieces, I think they like their running back room, specifically the top two with Trey and Usman. Receivers, Deuce, obviously very well-known piece with Malachi being important. I think they also like Boggs when he is healthy. Devin Carter, for example, some other pieces. They talk about liking their tight end room. I don't know that they like their tight end room or at least love it. I've never gotten a vibe that they think there's a huge impactful individual in there.
I think they do. I think they've turned the corner on Desario Ryles in the spring because he was dinged up for a part of it. That's what I think. That's their perception. That would be my perception, Chris, of their perception. Just for my.
And I think the O-line group maybe not as great or not great, but as good of a top five as last year, but certainly deeper and more capable of getting through the storms of injuries that come with big body individuals. So I think there's a matter of they like those pieces and they think Ashton fits it well enough to operate it at a good clip and they can be a capable offense.
Do you believe that? Have you learned anything? Or I know where you stood on it.
I don't believe anything about this football program currently.
Okay. All right.
I mean,
right,
seriously, fair. I don't. I'm in the wholehearted, I need to see it, believe it. Didn't get to see any spring. Don't care about that. It doesn't matter to me anymore. But it is a matter
you're
of
just bitter.
No, I'm not. It doesn't give you a baseline to judge it off of. Everything you're getting is secondhand sourcing. Everything is somebody usually with some form of an agenda or an opinion or at least skin in the game telling you something about something. And you got to see it to believe it. We're going to know. They roll out there, and in the first three, they play SMU and Alabama. If they're a capable, decent, good football team, we'll know. If they're not, we'll also know. That's where I land on it. I've never been high on the Ashton Daniels take. I don't particularly care for it. I think it was short-sighted, I guess, is probably a good word for the idea of what you're trying to do at quarterback. It needs to be a more important position than how FSU's valued it. If you're taking a guy who they took to be your starter – And that literally took 15 practices to reach that decision, which I believe it did take a majority of those 15 practices. It's not exactly going to mean it warm and fuzzy. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't think that middle of the camp, like, I don't think that was performative for what it's worth. Like, I think,
no, I think that's where Sperry made it truly an interesting deal. And I don't think Sperry did a phenomenal job of closing it out while Ashton was a little bit more calm.
No, he did.
Basically, third scrimmage, Ashton definitely got the knock, is what that
part, I mean, I think Kevin threw multiple interceptions at five. And so it's like, even that middle part of it, I've heard mixed things. Some people said, you know, Kevin closed the gap. Others kind of made it sound like Ashton fumbled it a little bit. And it's, I don't, that's where you say it's all secondhand. I don't know. Do you have, before I forget, do you have your window open to where you can see me during this?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I'm smiling, you know, I'm joking, right? When I'm giving you a hard time about being bitter.
I'm over those things.
Did you read my Ashton Daniels? What was the analytical? What am I titling the
thing about Deuce Robinson throwing so on?
Yeah,
I've read those.
What
is that? Consuming your football content. No, I think it's a fair point. I mean, it's May. Like, are we going to write about what they're going to do in fall camp? No, it's too early for that, in my opinion. Yeah. So, like, there's a matter of, like, what do the statistics and things that guys have done in their past, whether at FSU or elsewhere, tell you about what they can do and what we view what FSU is going to try to accomplish being. And I think
the ultimate and the first one on Ashton Daniels is not very flattering. He is an outlier with passer rating, passing efficiency. Now, he does run the ball. And this is like stuff that we already kind of know, but I think it is good to actually take a reflective analytical look to try to be as objective as possible, right? And he is an outlier in terms of the running, not just production, but like how much he I'm trying to get the right word for it. I'm better on paper than I am on podcast, I think. Sorry, Colin, and to Chattanooga Whiskey, our sponsors. Oh, we should sponsor things I write as well. Anyways, I think his productivity and his ability to be available, the best availability is availability, is a thing that you can use in the run game. But the passing efficiency, just it's awful. I mean, it's been abysmal for a majority of his career. The silver lining is something I looked at in the second one, and really I didn't start that article in looking at whether Deuce Robinson, basically that investment in retaining him, if it can be impactful in just a getting the ball to him standpoint, not him being a distraction or an orbital force for the offense. But like, can Ashton Daniels get your best player, probably on the entire roster? Imagine one of the highest paid players on the roster. Can you get him the ball consistently? And my initial thought was like, no, right? That's how I went into it. That was my hypothesis. But for those who didn't read the story, basically, it was interesting. Deuce Robinson lived more or less like probably 60% of his targets were in a very finite area outside the numbers. Ashton Daniels, as it turns out, the one thing that he's pretty consistent at throwing well is throwing outside the numbers. So that begins to give us like an idea if it works. I'm not saying it's going to work, but like if you want to start looking at methodology, that's the plan. I think it's like, okay, that's where you're going to get the ball to. That's where you're going to feel good about. Now, can you get everything else to fall in line? Can this be an 8-9 win team? That's where Chris's point of this we'll see is. But that is the discussion on quarterback I find interesting. Malachi Marshall, I really do want to – I wish we were out there at fall camp, dude, because I think it'd be fun just to see – like, he does spin it. It is a lot of fun. He's also thin and smaller and has a shorter amount of time to get ready for it. So the variance for the season, the variance is pretty vast. But, like, I don't know. I'm excited about what that could be. Maybe not this year, but next year and maybe like in the middle of this season or something like that. Did Mike talk about Malachi? I think he did, right?
Yeah. I asked two specific follow-ups that I recall asking him about quarterbacks. One was Ashton interceptions, his career history with that. He's basically a one-to-one touchdown to the interception guy. He talked about that, and I don't know, that answer I don't think gave people really any warm fuzzies. And then I did ask about Malachi because obviously the last time we had spoke to Mike about quarterbacks was the last day of spring, and he went out of his way to bring up Malachi, I think, without anybody actually asking about him, maybe. I can't remember.
I really clunkily
did asked. You ask him? Okay.
Shocking.
He had a certain energy in discussing Malachi Marshall, and he had that again when we were sitting in Amelia Island. I think the thing with him is that like there's intrigue with what he's capable of. I think one thing to remember with Malachi is that if he was a January enrollee, I think the market for him would have been dramatically different. Because obviously you get a spring with him, there's the opportunity to basically onboard him quicker. Mm-hmm. When you have to wait till summer at that position, that complicates things a lot. It can be done, but it's asking a lot, especially with a guy who's got to make some physical gains because he is relatively thin. And he's just making a huge leap going from the JUCO level to the collegiate level. But all that being said, if he is a multi-year investment at the position, I think there's a lot of excitement about what he could develop into if you're able to have the retention and the consistency with the offense with him.
Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Row. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Row. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Row. Go to ro.co/listen to see if you qualify. Rx only. Go to ro.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
Okay, so that's what I'm interested in. I think that's a storyline once fall camp begins that we'll see. And can Ashton Daniels, for that month duration or a little bit less than that, can he avoid these big pitfalls? I think those are two storylines to kind of put on the radar for the next month and a half from now. The other talking points that I think we should go over spring meetings is Michael Alford talked on record. He's done some lately, but hasn't been kind of in a media scrum other than announcing the John Garrett hire in December. Yeah, it was December. It's just an interesting setup with three of them on the stage. And I've got my thoughts on that. But anyways, Michael Alford speaks a little bit. It's FSU's athletic director. Talked about a variety of subjects. But, you know, I think everyone wants to know about football program and funding and just direction. And I'm going to just put a quote here, Chris, and then we can discuss what else you guys talked about, what you found interesting from that. But on program trajectory, Michael Alford says, quote, "So I think we're setting ourselves up for the future with the process and procedures to reestablish the program to what it was. It hasn't been to where the standard should be. We know that. We wanted to keep pushing and keep investing and get the program back to where it was." So when you hear about investments, when you hear about basically investing to get it back where it was, what does that mean to you? How do you interpret that? Because there wasn't a whole lot of other that I remember from the article details on specifically, you know, what those investments look like. Is he talking about the front office? What was he referring to there?
Yeah, I believe he's talking about John Garrett, Taylor Edwards, and the build out of that group. Also, I think it's about the belief that they need to improve evaluations in the way they financially invest and set evaluations, basically in roster building. I come back to, like, why did it take back-to-back bad seasons for this start evolving? Like, we talked about it regularly on this pod after 2-10. They need to fix their front office. They need to build it out. They need to have more capable people doing it. Like, D-Ray, UCLA Ray, like, there's an element of he gets a lot of blame, and some of it's fair and some of it certainly isn't fair.
But UCL Ray.
Sorry. Ultimately, he was kind of swimming in the waters by himself in a job where it probably should be a half dozen very capable people working together these days. Like, it's just nuts to me that it took an additional 12 months and going 5-7 for people to arrive on that idea. And there are people in that building who arrived on that idea 12 months prior, but nothing got done about it. As for Michael's comments, Alfred's comments.
Real quick, can I park the bus there real quick? I think that goes to a broader topic that we've danced around a little bit recently, but I think I want to start introducing it a little bit more, Chris. And that's the idea of like we can be critical, and there is deserving criticism of Michael Alford and some of the predictions he's made on where things were going to go with college athletics. But I think the bigger picture is, you know, are you able to move swiftly as a university right now, as an athletic department, as a football program, or does it take a while? And is there alignment from Board of Trustees, president, athletic department, football program? You know, are those all in alignment? And for the longest time, we'd heard yes. But now the more I hear, the more I talk, the more I try to report on that topic, it seems increasingly like it takes a while for things to get done. There's not always on the same page. And I don't know where, I know people are going to want to be like, where do you put blame? I don't know. I don't know if that's how that works necessarily. But what I do feel comfortable with is people who are smarter than I am and who study these things professionally, like, have said, like, yeah, they're not in alignment. And so when you talk about like building out a front office, you know, did they have the full funds to build out a front office and go get new coordinators 2 years ago? Like, was that allocated? And that's beyond the athletic director, I think, in a lot of ways. Like, did they have that 2 years ago? And so those are at least things to, I think, we start asking, start talking about, should be part of the conversation moving forward. Because Florida State, I thought Drew Weatherford, when he was on the Board of Trustees, said this really well a couple years ago. It's like, you're in it now. When they were talking about suing the ACC, it's like, if you're in this game, you're in this game. The half steps, half measures. Trey, I thought, in the podcast with Zach, said it well. It's like, you can't cut the baby or split the baby, whatever the Greek not analogy. I don't know. My brain. Whatever. What word am I looking for? Greek tail? Not tail. When they cut the baby.
I'm not Greek, baby. I'm Irish.
It's what they do. They do their own folklore as well. It's something about cutting a baby in half. And you don't actually cut the baby. You just tell them, hey, we're going to cut the baby. I also saw an episode of Recess that was similar to that in elementary school, but it wasn't involving babies. Anyways, taking us back here with my ADHD brain. Does that make sense?
Sorry, Colin. I can I give you the Cliff Notes version of what I think you're trying to get at?
Yes.
You're trying to be a successful, good football program. It's a big spend and it's costly. And you got to do things with high levels of efficiency, hire the right kind of people, and then operate it very quickly. An example where that fell short is they hired good people. Taylor Edwards, good at his job. John Garrett, good at his job. The fact that it took basically, you know, we're going to go back to the Stanford moment. What a great moment in life. The fact that it took that moment until essentially end of December to get there is not efficiency. One of those individuals is ultra attached to your program already. And yes, he worked at another institution. They were having a highly successful season. Maybe you wanted to see that through. But one of those individuals is connected to your program already. The other one was attainable because you're bringing him in for a more prominent role than he had at the institution he was most recently at. I don't know why it takes that long. And like, obviously, they had some fingerprints on the portal cycle and stuff. But like, you assembled a 31 person high school class and got into portal cycle before you really had the people that ultimately have say over your roster with the financial investment into it, the way it's constructed. Is the depth correct? Are you putting enough opportunities at positions for you to be successful getting there late? And it's just nuts to me that it didn't happen like 12 months earlier. You won two games. Like, it wasn't bad luck. You won two games. You earned two games. Like, that's where going back to the root old comments of procedures and processes and all that, it's just got to be better. You got to run the football program like the corporation that it is. And I think FSU tries to put on that they do that. I don't think they do an ultra effective job of that, personally. It's aggravating.
Yeah, we can talk about process over results, but the results are the results at this point, right? And I think that's ultimately, it is a result business. And so you talk about the process, it is important, but as much as we can talk about that, really the results are horrid right now, and you're stuck in the
financial investment. Right now, financial investment in football has to be at absurd levels to compete. I don't know that FSU wants to compete at that level. Just matter of fact, like viewing it in the prism of what I know about the program, how it's operated, how they recruit, what they're willing to do. I'm not convinced they are interested in operating at that level. Maybe they just simply cannot. That may be true. But like, I feel like they keep trying to tell us that, yes, that's what we intend to do. But the reality is that's not what they're doing. And that to me is a, I don't know, it's a disingenuous disconnect.
And then you get to some of the other, and this is all stuff we've talked about before, but it is part of the conversation. This is someone's first podcast. So you get to the question of like, okay, funding. Well, are you either underfunded or are you misusing funds as a football program? I don't mean like insidious turn. It's like, are you being negligent in like how you, and it can be, and the answer can be both. And then we start talking about
whatever the actual figure on last year's roster was, and we've heard different things from people that are in that, those buildings, but it's in two relatively similar ballparks as much as millions of dollars can be in a relatively similar ballpark.
I think they're in entirely different ballparks, which is confusing. But anyways, that's something I'm trying to rationalize.
Right, well, I'm going to be matter of fact here. I think they spent at least $10 million less in Miami, or maybe ballpark about half of what I think Miami ultimately spent. I think Miami spent more in like the $36 million range, for example.
Last year?
Yeah. So
from like, a percentage standpoint, you're talking about like half the
most. Yeah, 50 cents to every dollar type of thing. Maybe more than a 65 cents to every dollar ballpark. So
yeah, those even if you're close to that. Yeah.
So that is obviously putting you at a disadvantage. People with more money can buy prettier things. But the bigger issue to me in the last couple of years is in the roster build, where some financial investment went, and the fact that you got zero return for it. And that is all hindsight, yes. Jason Jenkins doing nothing for you, hindsight. Squirrel White doing pretty much nothing for you, hindsight. Those are just a couple examples of many. But like, that's where you got to be better. If you're going to live in a different tax bracket and you want to be somewhat competitive, at least a winning record ballpark, you have to be as efficient in every penny you spend in building a roster. And that's where FSU fell short. And they fell short because they didn't have the manpower or the capability of doing it when they left themselves shorthanded in a front office situation. The fact that it took an additional 12 months to address the front office is negligent.
And last year's team, yeah, I agreed, period, with that. And that's not up to pull a Bud Elliott. That's not a second guess, right? That's something that we were banging the drum on. I think we're kind of unique.
People that wanted the front office addressed within the football program after 24, and it just simply did not happen to the
We were unique to that. I think we caught a lot of pushback at the time, but like that's where it was going. It was very clear. Well,
pushback was that people thought it was blame D. Ray.
Yeah, no, it
don't get me wrong. And I told Derek Ray this. There were things he did that underwhelmed me.
Yeah, sure.
But he was also by himself doing it. Like,
yeah.
Go look at OU's front office structure, and then look at FSU's.
The kids say, I don't know if I'm going to say, I don't want to say it because I don't know what it actually means, but there's an article that was done. There's a lot of props being given to the Oklahoma front office.
I've cited OU's before that article, so I'm not just parroting what I read.
Well, and then that gets us to like the athlete group was brought in to do an evaluation of FSU's front office. I mean, everything top to bottom, the entire program, the athlete group. I say that because that was the third, not investor. Oh my God. My consultant. Brain. Consultant. Wow. This is not good, Chris. This is not good. I'm way too young for this. That was a consulting firm that Florida State brought in to help kind of spearhead its front office search potentially. I don't think that's what ended up happening. They gave more of an evaluation of things. I have never seen the report. I've talked to people who have seen the report. That's the closest I probably will ever get to it. But I mentioned one, the athlete group, because that's who was tasked with the Oklahoma front staff. They actually, you know, helped pick Jim Nagy and then rounded out the front office. And so that group over there did that. They came in. I think that was at the behest of the board. FSU's board of trustees was interested in it. It was signed off on by the athletic department, by the coaching staff, obviously. Get a look under the hood. I've talked to someone who's seen that report, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. This is something I'll probably end up writing about. One of the biggest takeaways from that was not necessarily some of the finite stuff, Chris. It was back to how this discussion started. The congruity, the full top to bottom university Westcott building, board of trustees, athletic department, football program down, is that it does not seem in alignment. And again, we'll never know that for 100% without physically seeing it or talking to the athlete group or something like that. But I have spoke to people who have seen it multiple, and that was brought up. And that's super important. That is, you look at Oklahoma, I think that is a place that's all in alignment. You look at Miami, that is a place that is in alignment with leadership down. And whether that is the case or not at Florida State right now, it doesn't seem like it. And to what extent, I don't know. I've heard the word dysfunctional thrown around once or twice. Okay. Like, stuff that needs to get better for this program. I'm trying not to say it judgmentally. I know it's how it's coming across, but like, I want it to do well. And I know you do more than I do. And it's frustrating when something that you spend a lot of time professionally in doesn't yield fantastic results. And then for us being members of the Tallahassee community, you being alum, Chris, it's just frustrating. You want to see it be in alignment and all work well. And that's the point place where I'm coming from with that. Well, that'll be something we discuss, I think, moving forward more, because that is important. I don't want to glaze over it. God, what's happening today? I think I'm my brain's fried. Anything else from the Michael Alford conversation before we bring Brett in here that he's talked about?
2014 playoff was a big topic of discussion there, and I know a lot of people have a lot of opinions on that. FSU, both head coach and AD, are in support of it, as is most of the ACC. Not the entire ACC. It was painted as though it was like unanimous. No, I don't think it's entirely unanimous, but I don't think FSU's the ones that are deferring. Trying to think, 5 for 5 was discussed by Norvell. That's obviously something I think everybody believes is coming. Jim Phillips did add that he thinks that's something that like school should go ahead and do. Commissioners, like, there should not be no government oversight on that. That just should happen. That's one of those things they can control and they should manage and they should do. Get eligibility back in check to a degree. You know, with Norvell, you've written some of it too, but like, he did talk about other pieces other than just quarterback. Again, I thought he talked pretty glowingly of most of the offensive positions, and then he highlighted some defensive players. He brought up Omar Graham, Daniel Lyons, and Tay Diggs all taking a step in like a 90-second stretch, and I won't say which media member, but one definitely looked at me thinking my heart may explode in a moment.
I'm trying to guess who it is. What if I guessed it correctly? Would you tell me on the first
one? There weren't a ton of us there, and it wasn't Bobby Bucket. So it was Ira. Ira looked over at me. It's like he just knows, like, yeah. We've seen Omar Graham play a lot of football. Maybe Tay Diggs does something for them because FSU. But we've seen Omar play a lot of football at FSU. I'm not suddenly going to believe he's taking some magical – gigantic.
It was legitimately a year ago, ACC spring meeting time, where I was talking to someone, it wasn't Mike, I was talking to someone who said, yeah, our passers is going to hinge on Tay Diggs. You know, if he's good, we'll be good. If he's not good, we won't be good. Well, he got hurt 3 games in. He had 1 sack, and that was really because of a pressure from someone else. I think it was one of the Desir brothers. And then he was out the rest of the year, but he wasn't trending to be a highly, you know, I heard Tony White talk about him as being dynamic. I haven't seen it yet. It's ignorance on my end. Maybe I don't know what I'm looking at. But I just, me, Mike Norvell yesterday or in the ACC spring meetings, and I was looking at the quotes the other day. I mean, he did bring up Raylan Kennedy. He did bring up Jalen Anderson. So he did bring up other members before he talked about Tay Diggs. But listen, man, we talk to people. Again, it's all secondhand because we're not seeing it ourselves. And as we learned in 2024, the context is the context. Like, someone can look look good. I could see Darius Washington push Josh Farmer around, but if they both take steps back, then yeah, I don't know how to judge that in a full vacuum. But I heard that Taye Diggs was disruptful, like consistently, and like especially like live settings, like he was getting into the backfield, like in scrimmages and good on good stuff in practices. Like he popped a lot. So you know, maybe I don't want to dismiss it entirely, but we also have 6 years of body of work, and he's never been that guy. He showed some flashes at Coastal, but it was not, you know, flashes at a G6 school aren't the same as flashes at a Power Four school. And if he's a top three member of your pass rush rotation, you kind of need more than flashes, I think, too. You need to be good at that one thing. Historically, it shows it's not. So whatever, people are allowed to get better. I think it's usually not a great formula to bank consistently on big steps from fifth, sixth year players. It just that generally is not how that works in modern college football.
Yeah, and development within this program has, for a vast majority of players, kind of fallen by the wayside in recent years.
Yeah, there was a time where it was freaking awesome.
Yeah, Mike did share a belief that year two in a Tony White defense for those guys who are returning, Blake Nicholson, Omar Graham, Taye Diggs, the twins, Deontay McCray, Jabril Rawls, Q Jones, so on and so forth, does benefit them. That they basically are more comfortable in it, more understanding of it, playing faster. I think there's also an element of they have tried to shape their personnel a little bit more to fit what they believe it is. All that being said, the flip side of that not discussed is that their D-line is relatively small from a size standpoint, which we've written about. And there's those kind of concerns that you worry about. You know, how are they going to be getting some run? The last time we saw FSU on a football field, they got run through by Jaden Baugh. So, like, yeah, it's all – FSU football is just in a current state where you have to take everything with a large grain of salt.
Let's talk about something that's a little bit more positive with its trajectory right now, a palate cleanse. Let's bring in Brett Nevitt, a.k.a. the palate cleanser. Is that what they call him? Unmute yourself. What do you think about that, the palate cleanser? No?
I don't know about that one. I don't know.
The PC.
I'll take it. It's better than other nicknames.
What's your best nickname you've ever gotten and your worst?
Ready Boo. Big B.
I don't think you should have admitted that on air. All right, Brett. FSU baseball is in its regular season finale right now at Miami, just won in dramatic fashion. Before I go any further, and you excuse my ignorance on some of these things, who was the Miami kid? His clip went kind of semi-viral in FSU circles, who didn't know who Wes Mendez was and was like being all – was it Wes Mendez? Did I say it right?
I'm
good. It's something I don't pay a lot of attention to. We're firing.
Yeah. Now. Who is Wes Mendez? Jake Ogden, their second baseman, was asked about Mendez and what they were going to face in him. And he just asked basically, who is that? And I'm pretty sure Ogden faced Wes last year for four at bats or something like that. So,
Was the smirk. The smirk got me.
Fun. I liked it. I think. Between that and them getting chippy last night after the game ended, I'm excited for the next 2 days, and I think it's something we all want to see. I mean, I don't want them to fight. I don't want people to get hurt, but like we want to see some chippiness. Like that's what you want to see in these rivalries still. And I thought to see the intensity last night from both sides was fun and exciting.
Ready Boo is preaching peace. I think that's that's nice. So FSU gets the win to start that off, and I think just generally, Brett. And I'll let you and Chris wax poetic about this, but like they've recovered, right? They've had ups and downs. You said, "Emma, stop itching." Can you hear this? Can you hear it?
Yes.
he's a monster.
Sounds like you have a prisoner in your room and they're trying to get away, but they can't get the.
Oh my god! This dog is driving me crazy. Anyways, just talk. I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point. I want to say they're 13-4 in the last 17 games. And I think that's since the Georgia Tech series, I want to say. And we kind of talked about Ari and I on Sunday Golds going into after that series that they had a stretch coming up where they could win a lot of games if they took care of business. And they didn't do that at Stanford. We didn't expect three losses at Stanford to be part of that. But outside of that, they've played really, 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 really well. And last night was kind of – the culmination of everything that they've done this year fight wise. Like Link, I think the end of Link's opening statement yesterday was just talking about if he knows one thing about his team is he knows they're going to fight. And last year, I was just looking up while you guys were talking this whole time, trying to find the last time they came back from five or more runs in the eighth inning or later. And I was going back through every single one. Yeah, I found it on Noel Fan going through every single one. It was 2014 was the last time they came back from 7-2 in the ninth against Boston College with a 9-run inning. So it's been 12 years since what happened last night happened. So it's pretty rare. I don't think anybody thought that they were going to win that game when they were down 6-1 in the eighth. You know, I don't think I did. I was preparing my gamer for a loss, but things can change quickly. And yeah, that was a really cool atmosphere to see last night and a really cool moment for that team and something that could be really big for them, propelling them into their last couple games and then the postseason.
I think the ACC Network threw up a stat. My wife was rewatching the end when I got home last night. They were FSU was 1-61 when down 3 or more runs in their last 62 games, with the one being last night. I felt like after Miles Bailey's injury, there was a lot of guys looking at other guys trying to figure out who was going to do what. And the team's got they've got some issues in the sense of like Ben Barrett's playing first base. Like, I mean, Link said that last night in the sense of like, who the hell had that projected at the beginning of the year? Like, if I told you Ben Barrett gets 3 hits against Miami while playing first base in the final series of the season, you would have looked at him like he was crazy. You know, Eli Putnam, guy who was 2-for-20 prior to getting his pinch hit last night, hit a 3-run shot, was in a rut. It wasn't fun. Wasn't going well for him. He comes up and shows that he has some juice in his bat. I think it was his 9th or 10th on the year. Chase Williams doing what Chase Williams does, where he provides a little craziness, and sometimes it goes your way, and sometimes, man, it makes you want to pull your hair out. Last night was a pull your hair out situation with him. That's just sort of what they are. Like, there are a few certain pieces. Braden Dowd, for example, is Mr. Consistency to me. Shmela is a guy who's been a nice stabilizing force for them, doing the platoon with Carnes and the other one being a DH. So there's a few pieces where, like, you know you got that, but there's a lot of piecing it together with that bunch. But they find a way to win. And I do think they're constructed pretty well to be a decent postseason team until potentially getting to Omaha. I think Omaha would be difficult for them, but as far as a regional and super regional format, I don't think they're, you know, their own worst enemy in that setting. I think they have a chance. So, like, it's been enjoyable. The one thing I took from last night, beyond it being a rivalry win, a fun comeback and all that, when they are, like, when it has a little bit more of a club Hauser feel, which we've had at Hauser in recent years, but I haven't felt that way about it as much this year, that group, I think, like, Link talked a lot in the preseason about their emotion and being unsure of if it was a good thing or a bad thing. I think last night kind of showed that, like, them being kind of an unhinged, loony group at times, it's not the worst thing. I mean, Gabe Frazier is a bit nuts, but, like, that can be a good thing, too. It can inspire confidence. It can do things, and you want that. I don't know. I came away from last night thinking, like, if that's something that has a carryover effect for them, I think it could be pretty impactful as they go in the ACC tournament in the postseason.
Yeah, and they're 26-3 at home now. So they've been incredibly good at home all year. And that's the biggest reason that becoming a top eight would be incredibly massive for them.
Should they be a top eight?
Or what needs to happen for them to be a top eight?
I think a lot of it depends on stuff around them as well. And a lot of it's just going to come down to, does the committee want to give the SEC 5 top 8 seeds or give them 4. I think the top 6 seeds right now are pretty much locked in, with 2 of those teams being ACC teams in Georgia Tech and North Carolina. Number 1 is probably locked up in UCLA. And then there's 3 SEC teams. And then after that, there's kind of a bunch of 5 teams with 3 SEC teams, FSU and Southern Miss, battling for the last 2 of the top 8. FSU's metrics look pretty good right now. I think they're number 6 now in RPI after yesterday, maybe 7, but I think they're 6. The one thing holding FSU's resume down is basically they lost every single one of their biggest games this year. I think against the top 5 opponents they played, they didn't win a game. Between Georgia Tech, Florida, I want to say Nebraska, Auburn, and one other team is in there as well, I think. But so they lost a lot of big games, but now they're 15-14 versus Q1 and Q2. I think if they can stay over 500 in Q1 and Q2, which would be winning this series against Miami, so winning one of the next two games, you know, I don't think the ACC tournament is going to matter too much. But if you do go out there and do some damage, it helps. Like, I don't think the ACC tournament can hurt you as a team that's going to only play one game after locking up a double bye last night. Like, if they were to go out there and go 0-1 against a team that's probably going to be a decent team in the ACC quarterfinals, like, I don't think it's going to be something that hits their resume. So I just think the biggest thing is winning this series. I do think if they were to win this series and then go win a game or two in Charlotte, that it will probably solidify it. But I mean, the biggest thing is Michael Alford is the head of the committee. Like, let's be real. Like, yes, technically he can't be in the room when they talk about FSU, but like, I don't think the head of the committee is going to screw his own team. So I think if they give Alford any reason for them to be the number 8 seed, that they'll be the number 8 seed. And they can do that by just going and winning this series, I think, and finishing the year with 18, or no, they're at 18 ACC wins right now. If they get to 19 ACC wins, that's usually a team that ends up being a top 8. It will just come down to how the committee views the gap between the SEC and the ACC this year, probably.
Yeah, I think on paper they're a top 8 today. Like, eye test wise, I find it funny. As someone who's been to pretty much every home game this year and obviously watched them a great deal on the road, they're weird, but in the end, they win a lot more than they lose and they get it done. It's just not always, they're not a team. If game control was the thing with baseball this year, they're not that team. That's the best way I can put that. They have stretches. I mean, last night they basically had a 6-inning stretch where they just kind of go silent at times. But then they do what they did in the 8th and the 9th. They have big innings here and there. Usually their bugaboo that hurts them in a lot of games is allowing a significant inning, 4 or more runs type of inning. Like, it's a weird deal. It's a very different team than I think Lynx ever had here. And honestly, it's a very different team than I can remember watching here in several years. But they are capable enough of putting something together and doing something long term.
That's well said, gentlemen. I agree with everything you just said. Is that what was your name again? Sugar Boo? What was it?
Oh my gosh. Ready Boo.
Ready Boo. Like, what's that mean?
I have no idea. You'd have to ask my Little League teammates.
I thought that was Morgan's nickname for you, if I'm being totally honest.
No. Chris, I think we started about 8 years ago. Oh gosh, more than that. I'm 26.
You played Little League baseball 8 years ago? That doesn't add up at all.
No wonder you dominated. You were 18.
14 years ago. Golly, I was in Little League 14 years ago.
Sucks get old, doesn't it, Brett?
Yeah, bro, wait. I can't think of any words right now. I'm losing my mind. Chris, what was your favorite nickname you've ever had and your least favorite?
I don't know. I'm not playing this game. I was called Fish quite a bit in college.
Fish?
Yeah.
How come?
Not going to explain that one.
All right. I think we need to end this. For Chris Nee, for Brett Nevitt, for Zach Blaustein, who's not here right now, but will be joining us shortly in the coming days. I'm Brendan Sinone. This has been On the Bench. I'm sorry, Colin. See you guys later.